Welcome to the Not Old Better Show. I'm your host, Paul Vogelsang. Today's show is an important one. It's timely, and as part of our Smithsonian Associates Partnership Program, our guest today is Dr. Marty Sherwin. Dr. Sherwin is a Cold War-era politics, diplomacy, and cultural expert. Dr. Sherwin will be presenting on these wide-ranging subjects, along with his work on the Manhattan Project, May 17th, 2017, Washington, D.C., at the Ripley Center. For ticket information, please check out our website, Not Old Better, or SmithsonianAssociates.org. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Marty Sherwin to the show today. We are with Dr. Marty Sherwin. Marty, thanks so much for joining us today on the Smithsonian Associates program.
My pleasure, Paul.
It's really great to talk to you. I think this is such an interesting subject. You're, of course, going to be talking about the Manhattan Project. I think it's just going to be fascinating for the audience of the Smithsonian to hear more about this. But I think kind of let's start at the start. Marty, tell us a little bit about your work.
Well, I've concentrated since the days of my dissertation on the impact of nuclear weapons on American society, culture, foreign policy, and so on. I began with a book called A World Destroyed. It's come out in several iterations. The latest one is A World Destroyed, Hiroshima and Its Legacies. I moved from there to a book with my friend Kai Bird on Robert Oppenheimer. It's called American Prometheus, The Triumph and Tragedy of J. Robert Oppenheimer, who, as everybody listening or reading this knows, was the director of the Los Alamos Laboratory of the Manhattan Project during World War II. And I'm currently writing a book, almost finished, I hope, on the nuclear arms race and the Cuban Missile Crisis. It's called Gambling with Armageddon, Nuclear Roulette from Hiroshima to Havana. And unfortunately, that seems to be more and more relevant every day, given the North Korea situation.
There does seem to be a certain unfortunateness to some of your work, but fascinating. And I hope that you'll come back and talk to us about Cuba. Today, though, what I'd like to focus on, at least initially, is the Manhattan Project and the wartime initiative that began to develop these nuclear weapons. Against today's stage, there certainly is a great deal of relevance. But at that time, back in 1941, let's say, based on your research, was this an imagined threat? Was there deception used to motivate the scientists to work on this project?
Well, nuclear fission was discovered in December 1938, and guess where? In Germany. Mm-hmm. And the discovery was published in Nature magazine in February 1939, and all the physicists around the world understood that one of the implications of this discovery is that it might be possible to build an explosive, monstrous weapon based on this discovery. It wasn't clear how it could be done, but that didn't alleviate all the worrying that the Germans might get it first. And there are a whole series of efforts by scientists to alert the government to the danger. The government responded, I'd say, in a very modest way. A lot of committees in the United States formed, committees of scientists, to try to figure out how this weapon, if it was possible, could be built. There's a famous letter that Leo Szilard composed and Einstein signed that sent to Franklin Roosevelt. saying that the Germans have seized the uranium mines in Czechoslovakia, that it might be possible to build a reactor, put on a ship, sailed into a harbor, and go critical and blow up the harbor and the city, that sort of thing. But by 1941 in the United States, very little progress had been made. But in Britain, two scientists who were refugees from Germany, two Jewish scientists, Frisch and Pyrles, who were not allowed to work on the most secret project, which was radar, figured out how it could be done. Mm-hmm. And the British and the Americans, having a treaty to exchange information that might be helpful in the war effort, the British informed the United States what Frisch and Pyrles had figured out. And very soon thereafter, the Manhattan Project was formed. Interestingly enough, Roosevelt approved, made the final approvals for the Manhattan Project on December 6th, 1941. Mm-hmm. And we all know that on December 7th, 1941, Pearl Harbor was bombed.
So about a year later, it looks like, from some of my research, there was a successful nuclear chain reaction that was created under the grandstands of Stagg Field at the University of Chicago. This seems like there's got to be a story there. What?
Yeah.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about that.
That's the famous Fermi experiment in the squash courts, which were under the stands, at the University of Chicago. It was the first nuclear reactor. It was built during 1942, and in December, Fermi oversaw the first nuclear control, for sure, controlled nuclear chain reaction. That proved that the uranium could be made to go critical. That is, you could extract energy from uranium.
We are with Dr. Marty Sherwin. Marty is a professor at George Mason University, a Cold War era politics expert, someone who has delved deeply into the subject of the nuclear period of time. It's interesting when you backdrop this, Marty, against today. If you were to look back in 50 years at today, what would you say about nuclear proliferation versus the 1940s and around the Manhattan Project?
Well, when nuclear weapons were finally developed at the end of near the end of the war, the scientific community that was working on nuclear weapons was very focused on the consequences of this development for the post-war period. They were also, of course, thinking about whether or not it should be used during the war, but it's important to understand that it was not just thought of as a wartime weapon. From the very beginning, the scientists and even Franklin Roosevelt understood that if it became a reality, would transform international relations. And the more astute scientists were very, very concerned about a nuclear arms race. And there were efforts at the University of Chicago to prevent the use of the bomb because these scientists quite correctly recognized that if the bomb was used at the end of the war, it would send a signal to Stalin that the United States was, in effect, threatening the Soviet Union. The scientists understood that nuclear weapons were not necessary, the use of nuclear weapons were not necessary to end the war in the summer of 1945. As soon as the Russians came into the war, the Soviets came into the war, the Japanese were going to surrender, and the Japanese were trying desperately to avoid the Soviets coming into the war against them. And that effort to prevent the use of the bomb failed. Stalin did react exactly as the scientists predicted. He felt that the United States was going to use nuclear weapons on him next if we were upset with his policies. And he did everything possible to build a nuclear weapon as quickly as he could. And the first proliferation was the Soviet nuclear test in late August 1949. That was followed by the British. It was followed by the French, and 64 by the Chinese, and so on and so forth. However, during the Cold War, both the United States and the Soviet Union more successfully, worked hard to prevent their allies from building nuclear weapons. The Soviet Union failed with China, and the United States failed with Israel, France, you know, and Britain. But President Kennedy, for example, thought that in 20 years there'd be 20 countries that had nuclear weapons. That didn't happen. Mm-hmm. But we're in a different era now, the post-war period, and the possibility of an acceleration of nuclear proliferation, I think, is a real possibility. Certainly, we see Pakistan, India, North Korea. There are a lot of countries in the world that have the potential to go for nuclear weapons, you know, within a year or two. You know, these countries that we're worrying about right now, and Iran, of course, are not on a short list. They're on a very long list of potential nuclear proliferators.
Well, Marty Sherman, thank you so much for joining us today. You'll be appearing at the Smithsonian Associates Program May 17th, downtown Washington, D.C. D.C. certainly is a science town, and the many researchers and science readers, I'm sure, are going to be very interested in what you have to say. This will be a big event. I know already it's going to be very well attended. I'm looking forward to hearing you. I had a chance to do a little bit of research on you and your work, and I just think this is a fascinating subject put together by just a fascinating researcher in Marty Sherman. Marty, we're looking forward to hearing you, seeing you there on May 17th. Thanks again for joining us today. We really appreciate it, and exciting to hear what you have to say, especially in light of everything that's going on today. Thank you, Marty.
Paul, you're welcome. Thank you for this opportunity.